I'm Abby.
And I'm Allie.
And it's
About Time for True Crime.
Hi.
Hey, you guys.
How are you doing?
How are you? How are things? How's life?
Is it as good as ours? Because we're having one hell of a night.
We are very slap happy. So you guys didn't know this because we kept it from you, but we've actually gone a few weeks from like seeing each other and getting to sit and record and everything. So Abby and I are both back from trips.
Yes, we are.
And we are sitting in our fat pants. We just had very yummy Mexican food.
Yum. Big burrito.
And now we are sitting in my home.
Yes.
Wrapped in blankets.
As we should be.
And we're ready to deliver one hell of a case.
We sure are. I mean, I don't know about you, but I definitely want to like touch base before we get into it. Because it's been five fucking ever.
I'll put something in the description that is kind of like a timestamp. So for your skippers who don't like the beginning, because I know there's some people that just come just right for the case. And I get you. I feel you. I'll put something there for you. But we haven't gotten to sit together and touch base and just enjoy hanging out with you guys.
Yeah.
In just a little bit.
Well, we've both been, how you say, world travelers.
And by world travelers, we mean, you know, within the States.
Yeah. Both of us went to go see family.
Yes.
So I went to Chicago. I went to the Cubs opening day.
Yes. Did you get the hot dog you were talking about?
I didn't get the hot dog I was talking about, but I did get a hot dog I will forever be talking about.
Oh.
That was quite the trip. If you guys are ever in Chicago and you're looking for a wild experience, go to the Wiener Club or the Wiener Circle. Yeah, I'm saying that right.
You better get the name right because otherwise you're sending people to different places.
Yeah, that's true. It's the Wiener Circle.
Okay.
All right, I got you.
Because Wiener Plays might be something else.
It is probably something else. Although you're going to have a hell of a time at this one too.
True.
They're going to roast you and then they're going to serve you a good hot dog. And if you are brave, and I do truly, truly mean if you are brave and only if you are brave and without children, you should ask for the chocolate shake.
Oh my.
Yeah. But I also found out while I was home that one of my cousins doesn't listen. Rude. I'm just kidding. It's totally fine. But we put ATFTC in our like group chat and she was like, do you mean the American Toy Fox Terrier Club? And I was like, yeah, for sure. That's what I mean.
That's it. We're changing our name.
So welcome back to your favorite podcast, the American Toy Fox Terrier Club.
Oh, God. That is so funny.
No, I said I'd shout it out. So I did. Because apparently we're in for a new rebranding.
Apparently.
Seemingly.
Okay.
And then Cubs won opening day. So what else could you ask for?
I know. I do also like those restaurants that you pay them and they make fun of you.
Oh, yeah.
Which is what that place is, right?
Oh, for sure.
So they roast you. It's not just like, not, they don't mean food. I mean, like, they're like going to insult you and.
Yeah.
They're going to, but sometimes I find that they. It's almost like revisiting middle school where it's like, oh, they're going to say the shit that hurts.
Yeah. Oh, no, they're going to. They're worse than eighth grade girls.
Like, they've picked up on like what you're sensitive about.
Yeah. I will say, personally, I think I won that whole exchange because they did not say shit to me. Okay. They didn't insult me at all. I don't know if they were afraid of what I was going to say back. I don't know if they could smell like the Boston in the air. They were like, oh, God.
They were like, she has an ulcer. We cannot add anything else to her
plate. Or if they were like, this bitch looks rough. Does she have an ulcer or something? Like, we can't do that to her. So it was one or the other or both, maybe.
Okay.
But I'm claiming it as a win. I'm just saying they were like, okay, she's cool. We won't fuck with her.
Yeah, Cubs won, Abby won.
Yeah.
Great Thank weekend. You. Well, I went on a little girls trip with my mom.
Ooh.
We went to Florida and we pet elephants.
Were they well taken care of?
They were very well taken care of. No, we were sure that they were like, this was ethical and something that we agree with, and it's a nonprofit, and they take in rescue elephants that were either, I believe, like working, like logging, or working in like circuses and things like that.
Good. Oh, good. So the elephants have a good time. You have a good time.
And they get a spa day every day.
Jealous.
And did you know that they eat 200 pounds of hay a day? It's a lot of hay.
Am I an elephant?
That's just, I'm like, and there was three elephants. I'm like, that's 600 pounds. That's just, that's a lot of hay.
A lot. It's a lot of hay. You know what I'm saying?
But I loved it. I don't know what I was expecting them to feel like, but it was not that. They're very like coarse and like callous, which is like, of course, because their skin needs to be, because they're like out in the sun all the time and they got to protect it and keeps them safe. But I don't know what I was expecting. One wrapped her trunk around my mom's leg and I loved that. It was very sweet. She loved my mom.
I love that.
As do I. And I got to hold her little trunk and they're just precious. I say little as if they're not absolutely massive, but just absolutely beautiful.
But they're precious.
Majestic animals. I think elephants are my favorite in the entire world.
They can paint.
Oh, what I'd give to have a painting.
They can paint so good. And they remember things. They got really good memories.
They have amazing memories.
Mm-hmm.
They have, I think, 3 times the memory that we have.
I love that.
So are we an Arctic fox podcast now or an elephant podcast?
American toy fox terrier elephant hybrid.
There it is.
You heard it here first. Anyway, we're no longer doing true crime. No, I'm kidding.
So that was a lot of fun. We got some, it was just a few days, but it was enough time to just have some girl time.
Aww.
And hang out. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Hi to the pod fam. We love you.
Yes.
The fam of the pod and the pod fam. I guess. Actually, both.
And then something else I wanted to touch base about before we jump into the episode here. And if you want to skip, go ahead. But sometimes we do some polls on our Instagram story. If you follow us over there, you've probably seen them. And we had a few questions. We'll try to answer them over the next few weeks. But there were two that I thought kind of went together.
Yeah.
And we kept saying we'd answer them and we haven't yet. So
sorry.
Now is the time. So we got two, and I'm so sorry I did not like screenshot it at the time, and it's now too far back in our feed. I can't see who asked it, but if you asked these questions, thank you. One of them was, what are your favorite true crime podcasts? And the other was, what made you want to start a true crime podcast?
Yes.
So do you want to start us off?
Sure. I guess if we're diving into history, my first true crime podcast that like got me going was My Favorite Murder.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked that they were kind of friendly and had like easy jargon to listen to. And I could laugh at like some of the most heinous things you could ever hear.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's important. Because like we say, if you're not laughing, you're crying.
Yes.
So I was definitely interested in that. And then as time sort of went on and like more podcasts popped up, I listened to Morbid for a while. And then after a while, like especially once we were doing our own, my favorites sort of shifted and they became more of like informative, very detail heavy, so that I could use them to help with research and like hear cases I'd never heard of and trust that I was hearing good information. And so like big shout outs. We love Mary Kill here. We are big fans of them. I really love 48 Hours and like Dateline, and they sort of go in and explain some of that stuff. So those are some of my favorites. And then, well, I guess I'll let you answer your favorites and then we can get into the other one.
Well, so I have like a lot of podcasts that I like, but I think what, to me, these questions go together because what I was searching for in a podcast, I really struggled to find.
Yeah.
And then I think we ended up kind of making what I was looking for in a podcast. And I don't know. I know some people disagree. Some people are like, no banter, no anything. I just want to hear the case.
Right.
And to each their own, absolutely. I think there's plenty of whatever kind of podcast you're looking for. I don't think you need to make a big deal about your exit. I think you can just find the one that you like.
Have you seen
like.
The market? It's saturated.
and go for it. But I was not a fan of just a very dry retelling of things because I feel like I could read an article and have it read out loud to me and it would probably sound very dry and very fact heavy. And then on the other hand, you could have really dramatic retellings of everything.
Yeah.
And I felt like if I wanted that, I could probably find a show that did that, or I could listen to an audiobook.
Right.
So what I was looking for were like hosts that I could trust, that I felt were educated, but owned that they were fallible. Like, you're human.
Right.
Your opinions change. Things change. You get more information. Like, you own that. I liked that. I like when people don't pretend that they know everything in the entire world and what they say is gospel, because that tends to irritate me.
Yeah.
I think we are very clear, like, hey, this is our opinion and our opinions change and we're growing and learning together.
Yeah.
But I also wanted somebody that was educated. I wanted somebody who actually like dedicated a part of their life to a lot of the things they're talking about rather than it being an interest. Not that I think that that's a bad thing, but I was looking for more.
Right.
But then I can't have it all sad all the time. Like, I can't finish a podcast and like want to cry. So I was like, I need levity. Like, there needs to be something. And then I think we kind of ended up making that, and it's not for everybody. This is, you know, just my opinion, but I needed to be able to learn. I needed to be able to grow and really question and think deeper about things. But then I also needed like some much needed breaks that aren't at the expense of the people that went through really tough things.
Right. Well, and sort of in a similar fact, so a fun little piece of trivia for those of you in the ATFTC pod fam, if you haven't heard this before, this was actually the brainchild of Allie. And she came to me and was like, hey, we should do this. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, we fucking should. And like, in a similar manner, there was not one particular true crime podcast that really had me. Like, I, be it the ADHD, be it a character flaw, a skill issue, I don't know, say it is whatever you will, I can't stand like dramatic retellings. In mm-hmm. fact, I can't stand them so much. Like, that wasn't even a part of my podcast journey. Cause like the second it was like, and then he walked through the door, I was like, I'm out. Like, this doesn't feel true. This feels like drama. This doesn't.
Yes.
And it feels sometimes, not in all cases, but sometimes it just feels kind of skeevy. Like, you're just making some sort of media entertainment out of someone's like absolute worst fucking day. So I didn't like that. And then in a similar manner, I wanted someone who was educated. And I knew that both of us not only worked in the field, but had a lot of education. And it was something that I was fascinated in. I've always had like I've always been kind of like drawn and fascinated to like the more morbid things that humans do in general.
Yeah. The like the sort of outskirts of the human experience, like what we do in so much is like we want to talk about it, but we also want to learn from it. Like,
right.
I'm a girl's girl. I'm, you know, we got to take care of ourselves and how we look out for each other. And I mean, a human, right? But yeah. Like, each case has something that we can learn from it and take away. And like, those things can't have been for nothing. And there's a comfort in a way that like you almost feel safer for having been able to predict or almost see it coming, where like, since I was 12 years old, I was like dialing license plate numbers that looked yeah, and calling them. And I was like, you know, damn it, there's a log of it. So if I go missing, like, I basically made my own if I go missing folder on my phone in my call history. Yep. And you knew where to look for it.
Yeah.
Because I am, how you say, a very short person. And all I'm saying is short and at the time very thin, where if somebody wanted to like pick me up and throw me in a trunk, there wasn't going to be a whole lot else I was going to be able to do about it other than like try to leave something where someone could find me. And that.
Yeah.
That's like spooky. Like, you think about that. I think there's a lot of women that you won't walk at night. You don't want to go for a run. You don't want to do things. And like, those things happen. What can we do to be best prepared? And I liked learning about that. And I like podcast hosts that like feel like my friends.
Yeah. And I think that was a similar thing for me, is I wanted to know that I could trust what you were talking about. Because once again, this market is saturated. There's a lot.
So many podcasts, and they are not all built equally, but
no. And again,
somebody loves them.
Yeah. It's like just what you said. It's to each their own. Everybody's got their own taste. But I want to know that if I'm learning about something horrendous, that is getting me feeling things, that's getting me thinking things and thinking critically, that I'm doing it with information that's accurate and with a lens from someone who understands what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if someone's going to talk about a defendant and then really mean a prosecutor, like, I'm going to get frustrated because that's obviously two very different roles in the same place. But it is, you know, legal jargon is its own jargon. It's its own language.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to know that whoever's talking knows what's going on, what they mean, what they are talking about, and sort of the ideals.
And don't pretend to also be the all-knowing, where it's like, well, right. It's my opinion or nothing. It's like, hey, this is how I feel, and I'll be upfront about my bias. And
right. And you know, also at the same time, like, maybe help educate along the way of something that maybe everybody doesn't know, or be able to say like, hey, this is changing, this is new, like, here are some updates in our legal world, which is very important to the field of true crime. Like, there are a lot of things like that that really got me interested. And then also, I just loved that it would be a little time capsule of our life. Like, in 20 years, we get to look back and listen to something that came out 3 years ago and say, oh my God, that was 2020, huh?
Yeah, right.
And I just loved that combination of things of like, I know I can produce something that is of good quality, of good content with someone I love. And also in 20 years, it's going to be like a fun little audio scrapbook of what were you doing?
Yeah.
You know?
And we just get to learn and grow, and there's room for everybody at the table. You know, we don't talk about politics. We don't talk about anything. Like, this is our escape from that world. Yeah. Which is very real. And this is our space to talk about what we think are really important things and give a space to do that. And so I have a lot of podcasts that I like. I would say My Favorite Murder is what got me started because you got me started on it.
Yeah.
And then we would, you know, we have, as we've said, a decade of experience between us, both working and in education. And then in our free time, we'd listen to it. And then our free time beyond that, we wanted to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'd say it was a big part of our day.
Yeah.
Every day and every piece of it. And then that led us here. And now we have this amazing community that we get to hang out with every week.
Sweet little fam and our sweet little pod baby. And we love it so much. And we love you guys.
Thanks for growing with us. Because in the beginning, I know we were rusty. We did not have it down.
But I'm not advocating for you to do this. In fact, I'm kind of frustrated I'm bringing it up, but I'm going to anyway. If you couldn't tell that as a kid, I had such a hyperfixation on the Romanoff family.
We still get so many emails and messages about that particular episode. They're like more history-based ones.
It's so funny to me because, okay, so a little side tangent and then we can get into it. I have absolutely binged the fuck out of Love on the Spectrum.
Yes.
I did not think I was going to like it. I kind of felt iffy about it, like depending on how it went, it could either feel like really exploitative or like kind of gross or I don't know, there was a lot of ways I felt like it could go wrong. Mm-hmm. And it ended up being just so sweet and so perfect. It's like very pure and wholesome. But as I've been watching that, I've been like, are there signs? Was I autistic as a kid? And I'm like, no, those overlap on the spectrum. Like ADHD is also neurodivergent. It's okay. It makes sense. And then I look back and it's like, as a kid, I memorized like the entirety of the Anastasia, like not Pixar, but like animated movie. And then I could tell you honestly, probably verbatim, the word press like blogs about the Romanoff history that were on page one of Google. Like I was like, okay, maybe we move on from that.
Okay, I'll do you one equal. I went on a deep dive on Abraham Lincoln when I was like 10 years old.
Hell,
and instead
yeah,
of printing the Wikipedia page, I hand wrote it.
Amazing.
The entire thing. Do you know how many pages that was?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm pretty sure my parents are like, we can print that for you. I was like, no.
You're like, no, this is good for me.
It's good for the memory. Like, who does that?
I used to do that with lyrics to songs. I'd print it out and I'd fold it in like eighths in my pocket. And then anytime I had a second, I'd be like, okay. And every time we touch, I get
no. I'm glad we met when we did.
Oh, yeah. No, we are way better for that. And so are you guys. Sorry about that little trip down memory lane.
How fun. Well, speaking of trips, let's get into our case. So if you were a skipper, my apologies. Stop skipping.
It's time. A yoo-hoo. Pod's on.
Yes. So thanks for hanging out with us. And I think we're going to get into our case. So if you clicked on this today, then you know we're talking about the murder of Jolene Cummings. You didn't know this because you didn't.
Dolly Parton's Jolene?
No, okay. Not Dolly Parton's Jolene. But everybody knows except Abby what it is that we're talking about today. But hi, hello, and welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast.
Aww.
About Time for True Crime, ATFTC, and all of its different renditions. we love getting to hang out with you in our little corner of the true crime world every week, and we feel lucky that we get to do it. And without further ado, I want to tell you about Jolene.
Please do.
So Jolene was born May 13th, 1984.
Mm-hmm.
And remember her birthday as May 13th because it is important later. She was raised by her mom, Anne, and her stepfather.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if her bio dad was in the picture, but it sounds like in every source that I could see, it just heavily references her stepdad. So sounds like he's the dad that stepped up. You know what
sure.
I mean?
Yeah.
From everything that I could find, Jolene just sounds like somebody that we'd be friends with. She was fun and full of life. She had so many friends, and she was known for her energy and her sense of fun.
Aww.
Like, she was just energetic and typical lit up the room when she walked in.
Yeah. It's so dangerous to be these days.
That's why I try to be the dark. No, I'm just kidding. After high school, Jolene actually enrolled in cosmetology school with the goal of owning her own salon one day.
Oh, I love that.
She was from the northeastern part of Florida. So it was Fernandina Beach. So it was in Nassau County.
Okay.
Which is less than an hour north of Jacksonville, according to my Google Maps search. So very much like you don't even think it's Florida. It's so far northeast.
Okay.
Shortly after she was enrolled in school, she had a child, a daughter with a boyfriend, but that relationship did not last super long. It seems like they were able to co-parent, but being a mom was her true calling.
Okay.
She was just over the moon to have this baby.
Aww.
Jolene did actually become a hairstylist, and she loved that job. In the time that we're talking about Jolene, she worked at a salon called Tangles.
Oh, I love that.
Which I just think is very sweet. And she had a very loyal client base, which she engaged with a lot on social media. So the time period that we're talking about is like 2012, 2013. So think Facebook.
Got it.
Think very long Facebook posts. Think lots of photos, especially professionals in sort of the creative world are really leaning into this side of, I guess, media.
Yeah.
That hadn't previously been available. I mean, we're talking the first few years of all of those things, and people really learned how it could benefit them. So she's interacting with like her client base and stuff, which prior to that, you'd only see them when you saw them.
Right.
So this was pretty cool. And clients were drawn to her because she was not only just a great stylist, but again, she was fun and she was inviting and nice. And let's face it, some hair appointments can last a really long time, and you want to be working with someone who does not only a good job, but someone that you enjoy talking to and being around because you might have to be there for a little bit.
And they're going to see you looking crazy. So you want to trust them. You want to like them.
And it's a skill to master both, to be good at your work, but to also be somebody that is inviting, that people trust to sit with. And, you know, trusting your hair with somebody is a big deal, and trusting how you look, and it does a lot for your self-esteem. It does a lot for your confidence. And I think they're not all great.
Yeah.
And to have one that you trust, that you really like, I mean, people are loyal to that, like going to your doctor.
Yes, that's true.
Jolene met and married Jason.
Okay.
Jason's last name was Cummings, which should sound familiar to you. And they married in 2013.
Okay.
She had two sons, born one in 2013 and one in 2015. So I believe, I don't know if she was pregnant when they got married, but the same year they were married, she did have her son.
Mm-hmm.
And then her third child in 2015. At this time, Jolene's a mom of three and she is loving it.
Yeah. And that's like essentially three under three. So that's a lot, but I'm glad she's living for it.
I think her first was a little bit older at this point, but yes, like she's got three younger kids. Yeah. And she is kicking butt, taking names, and they just were her entire world. Aww. Like she was born to be a mom. She loved being a mom, and any chance that she got to be with her kids, I mean, she took it. She wanted that. But unfortunately for Jolene and Jason, their marriage was pretty short lived. They were divorced in 2017.
Oh, okay. Oh.
And by the time that we're talking about in like 2018-ish, Jolene had actually recently begun dating again.
Oh.
And things began looking up. So my understanding is that she and Jason were able to have like a pretty solid co-parenting relationship. I don't know that they were the best of friends. I don't know that their divorce or their separation was very pleasant. I think rarely they are, but I think that both of their main focuses were the children, which is the most important thing. And Jolene had started dating another man. His name also happened to be Jason. We're going to talk about him in just a little bit, but she was feeling hopeful. She has her job. She sees her kids. She's entering the dating world again.
Got Jason 2.0.
Yes. And then we're going to fast forward to 2018. Saturday, May 12th. 2018.
Ooh.
Jolene was due off work at the hair salon at around 5 p.m. 2 days later, on May 14th, 2018, Jolene was reported missing by her mom.
Oh.
Specifically, it was notable that Mother's Day 2018 came and went and Jolene didn't call her mom or see her own children who were staying with their dad at the time. And this was extremely out of character for Jolene because she would have never missed a day with her kids. And it was actually planned and scheduled for her to be with her kids that day. But especially because this Mother's Day, that Sunday, happened to be her birthday, May 13th.
That's a lot to miss.
So she had work on May 12th, that Saturday. And then Sunday is Mother's Day and her birthday. And she's due to pick up her children or I think meet her ex somewhere to pick them up. And she doesn't show.
Yeah.
And that was very odd. Because there wouldn't have been anywhere else that she'd want to be than spending it with her family. And to not have called her mom. Her mom was like, she always calls me.
Yeah.
And I read somewhere that she was the kind of woman that would get her mom flowers on her own birthday as like a thank you for bringing me into this world. Like, I love you. Like, I'm here and it's my birthday because of you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Oh, and I so love that. That year when that didn't happen, it just kind of added another layer of something's wrong here.
Yeah.
So that Sunday, that Mother's Day came and it went and her family hadn't heard from her. She hadn't made any social media posts related to Mother's Day or her birthday, which was also odd, especially during this time. I mean, we're talking 2018. It's more recent now, but I mean, when you think about it, that's still 7 years ago. And
oh, shush.
Perhaps maybe people, I don't want to say the C word, COVID, but, you know, that kind of changed our perception of time. But the fact that she hadn't posted anything was odd and she didn't really go that long without doing that. So their concern was growing.
Right.
Jolene's mom was immediately worried. She just had a feeling something was wrong. Call it mother's intuition, her gut instinct, whatever. She just knew. Jason Cummings, Jolene's ex, called his ex-mother-in-law. So Jolene's mother, okay. Anne, reached out to her and said, you know, Jolene was due to come meet me to get the kids and that didn't happen. Have you heard from her? Because I can't get a hold of her. And then this just sent Anne, like, I hadn't heard from her. I was worried. And now you're telling me she didn't come to pick up the kids. And I know she would have come to pick up the kids.
Right.
Like, that did not make sense. So he knew this was out of character.
Right.
Because regardless of whatever was happening between them, it was still concerning. And then when he hears the panic in Anne's voice and Anne kind of hears the concern in Jason's voice, they're both kind of like, oh, what the hell?
Are you freaking out? I'm freaking out. Well, and also what a good, if nothing else, what a good co-parenting relationship that you can say, I'm going to call her mom to see if she's heard from her.
Right. And I don't know. I don't want to like sound accusatory or anything, but I think it could be really well intended of like, geez, is she okay? Or it could also be like, hey, my weekend with them's done. When are you coming to get them? Like, you know what I mean? I think it could go either way. It could go either way. I don't want to assume that about him because I really don't know too much about him. But regardless, like it set alarm bells off the fact that that day could come and go and that day meant so many things and it was just crickets on the other end. And so Anne is like, that gut feeling she had is even stronger now.
Right now it feels validated.
Yes. Like it's all growing more worrisome, like as each hour passes and they've not heard from her. Both Jolene and her vehicle, a Ford Expedition, were missing. So her car was not at her work.
Oh, okay.
Which made them think maybe she left.
Right.
So her mom reports this to the police. The police do take it seriously, and an alert was made asking for the public's help in locating Jolene and her vehicle.
Okay.
A tip was reported from a man that believed he saw that 2006 Ford Expedition parked in the Home Depot parking lot of Yulee, Florida. Okay. Which was like a town or two over. I believe it might have even been like where she was living. And Fernandina Beach was like where her work was. So these are all like close areas. But regardless, they had asked the public for some help because this was odd. Mm-hmm. If you've seen Jolene, if you've seen this car. And then this guy calls in and he's like, well, I'm at the Home Depot and I'm pretty sure I'm looking at the car.
Yeah.
Just sitting in this parking lot. Nobody was in it, but it was there. And this was confirmed. So okay. They're like, okay, well, we can try to track her movements to here.
Yeah.
She must have gotten here. Security footage from this area showed a woman parking the vehicle in the Home Depot parking lot. And then that woman walked into a gas station across the street and asked to use their phone to call a ride.
Huh.
This footage was from about 1 a.m. on the 13th. So this was hours after Jolene was last seen, around 5 p.m. on the 12th.
And who takes their car to Home Depot to get a ride at 1 a.m.?
You know, Abigail, you have so many good questions.
I sure do.
Investigators were on this, though. Like, they're like, this does not look right. We don't know what's going on here. They're trying to retrace her steps. So they confirm with the salon owner that Jolene had actually been working on Saturday, confirmed by her colleagues, clients, things like that, and that she was due to be off work around 5 p.m. on Saturday the 12th, and that she was actually working with this new employee named Jennifer Seibert. And police wanted to interview her because she was could have been the last person to see her alive. And they needed just anything that she could tell them. Yeah. You know, how did she seem? Did something seem off? Was she worried about anything? Did she leave early? Did you leave before her? You know, a lot of questions that they had. But when they try to talk to Jennifer, Jennifer's acting really odd. And from what I understand is that Jennifer showed up for work this day and she pulls into the parking lot to go into the office. And I think the owner like let her know in the parking lot, like the police are inside. I don't know if you've heard, but Jolene is missing. And you know, they want to talk to you. And so when you go in, just make sure that you introduce yourself and talk to the police. Yeah. And instead of just maybe like a little bit of worry about a colleague, Jennifer pretty much said, yeah, no, and told the owner that she was quitting.
Oh.
And you should just mail my last check.
Oh, all right then.
And she drove off.
Well, don't come asking for a letter of recommendation.
And I think the boss, like, her flabbers are gassed.
Yeah.
Okay, she is not, like, this was odd. This woman was already odd.
Okay.
Jennifer was already kind of an odd duck at work. But extremely weird that she catches wind that there's police inside and she's not going.
Yeah.
And she's like, actually, I quit. But she was showing up to come to work. So she quit on the spot. You know what I mean? She didn't show up to give her 2 weeks. She's like, I'm out of here. As soon as she finds that anybody wants to talk to her. And she refused to talk to the police. And then I believe they ended up contacting her, or she told this to the boss in passing and just said that she had been stalked by an ex-boyfriend previously and she didn't want to have any law enforcement contact because she was essentially like hiding. She didn't want any reports mentioning her name.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't want any record of anything. So she's like, I'm out. Like, I have nothing to say. I want no part of this.
Well, and if true, stalking is terrifying. I understand that. Like, to truly, truly get a stalking charge, like, there has to be a lot going on that's really scary. But, even so, if that's the case, then ideally, historically, the police were on your side.
And also, you would likely ask, and this is not to say that mistakes don't happen and you know, it's 100% foolproof, but when there's a real concern for your safety, if you ask to remain anonymous and in their police reports and everything like that, like, they can give you an alias or they can give you, like, identify you by initials or something else.
Right, or even just anonymous tips came in from this area.
Like, your name doesn't need to be in writing necessarily for this very valuable information that you can give about a woman, a mother of three who's missing.
Yeah.
And that just didn't seem to matter to Jennifer.
Yeah.
And I mean, really, she was behaving really nervous and she was so adamant about not saying anything, even though she wasn't under suspicion. They just wanted to talk to her about, like, hey, how did Jolene seem?
Right.
But instead, she's like, I'm out of here. And like, her story didn't really check out because they're like, we have no record of any kind of like stalking incident or like any recent reports having to do with her. So we're going to leave Jennifer there.
Okay.
Because meanwhile, investigators need to rule out a few people. First, let's start with Jason Cummings.
Yeah.
You know, the ex-husband. And then you also have to consider the new boyfriend. Remember, I said she had begun dating again.
That's true. Jason 2.0.
Yes. So if we start with Jason Cummings, you know, he's the ex and it's always the husband, right?
Well, even more so, maybe the ex-husband.
And why had her mother been the one to report her missing and not him when he was the first one to notice because she didn't come to pick up the kids?
Yeah.
That's odd. But Jason had an airtight alibi and he was ruled out.
He also has three small children that yap. Because most small children who can talk yap. So they'd probably have some fun talking.
Well, and that's the thing, is that, like, I think he was more frustrated that she wasn't there, but he wasn't initially concerned, maybe until he talked to Anne.
Right.
And then it was like, oh.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
So then there's the boyfriend, right? We said she's dating. Yeah. The boyfriend actually had a warrant.
Oh.
Unrelated to Jolene's disappearance. Entirely different case. But it did make interviewing him kind of easy because they picked him up on the warrant. He's already detained. And then they had questions for him. And his name is also Jason, as I mentioned. His last name is either Gee or G. It's G-E-E. Mm. I think it's Gee. And again, yes, they are both Jason. And that Jason had actually had recent police contact.
Oh.
Earlier the same week that she went missing, police were called to Jolene's home for a domestic disturbance between the two.
Oh.
I believe that she was the victim and he was the assailant in this situation. And when they asked him about what happened to Jolene, he claimed not to know anything regarding the disappearance of his girlfriend.
Oh.
So we've got three people right now. We've got Jason Cummings, who they've pretty much ruled out. We've got Jason Gee, who is the boyfriend who has a criminal history because he's being picked up on this warrant. Yeah. And there was a recent domestic. And then we have this co-worker Jennifer, who is an odd duck, who kind of weirded everybody out, but
and yeeted the second she heard wind.
Yeah, she yeeted.
Yeah.
So then if we go back to Jennifer, investigators are thinking this is so odd. She basically ran away from an interview and she quit her job on the spot to avoid any law enforcement contact. That's pretty bold.
It's a lot.
And they're like, so what is she hiding?
Yeah.
So she had told the boss to mail her last check. I think they were like, all right, well,
we'll hand deliver it.
We'll bring it to her. So they go to the address on file where they were supposedly supposed to send the check. But not only did she not live there, it didn't exist. There was no address to go to.
Oh my God, she pulled the Blues Brothers.
They are literally like on their way, like, okay, let's go. And then it's not there.
Address not found.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
And this led them to believe that she was likely living in her vehicle and that she didn't have an address to list, but would she have really put hers down? I don't know.
Who knows?
Learning more about Jennifer seemed to only add to their suspicion, though. Coworkers found her odd. Customers found her off-putting. One of Jolene's clients noted that she just seemed to butt into their conversation and was rude to Jolene while she was there.
Oh, weird.
So this client and Jolene are having a conversation and Jennifer would like kind of instigate like a problem and kind of put Jolene down, and that just seemed odd. Other colleagues thought she was weird and scary.
Oh.
They would kind of talk and like, you know, like you're friendly with your coworkers. You spend more time with your coworkers a lot of times than most other people. And you get to know them. And while everyone else is kind of talking about their lives, she was very adamant that she does not discuss anything personal.
Oh.
That they only knew her name. And in the salon business, especially, the less talkative and more standoffish you are, like, the less good for business that is, and doesn't often make customers feel at ease to talk to you or to feel eager to come back to see you.
Stone walls aren't super warm and fuzzy.
And I imagine that while I think some of that could just be some catty stuff, I could also see that if I were a stylist there and one of my colleagues was really off-putting and standoffish to customers coming in, that that could affect my business. That could affect my clients wanting to come see me because that impacts their overall experience. And if they decide to go somewhere else next time because the vibe here was wrong, I'd be kind of upset that this person's the reason for that.
Well, and if she did what she did to Jennifer to anybody else, like, then imagine you're giving a service to a client, whatever that is, and she starts interrupting you to start causing things, then that could be an issue.
Yeah, like, what if you piss off the stylist or the customer and...
Yeah.
What's this, like, that puts the stylist in a spot. It's just not good for business. One of the other stylists was talking about Jennifer to her mom once, and she said that she was freaky, like she had killed someone and was on the run.
So, okay. So I think in my head, there's more, but also just to give the benefit of the doubt for the sake of giving the benefit of the doubt. There are two ways you can take this, and I either take it as there's way more happening here, which I lean towards, or like there are some pretty significant cultural differences, but I'm not getting that vibe. It's possible. I'm just not getting that vibe.
No, it's, yeah, you're surveying. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I dig that. I don't think it's cultural.
I'm analyzing what I'm getting.
I might have a little bit more information than you.
You so sure do. So I tend to listen to you.
Oh, thanks. But I will say that, yeah, like, there can be a bunch of different reasons why this can happen. There can be other things going on. But in this particular case, like, the fact that one of them just, like, even recalled telling her own mother, like, there is this lady at work and I, like, there is something
weird
off.
Yeah.
Like, she is shifty and odd and dodges questions and doesn't talk. And when she does, she's rude.
Wait, speaking of coworkers, can I just say, am I the only one? You guys have to let me know. Am I the only one who, like, I don't like to friend coworkers on social media while I'm still working somewhere. Mm-hmm. But obviously, your phone's always listening. So they know all. And you always get them popped up in, like, suggested friends.
Mm-hmm.
Can you also tell everything you need to know about a coworker by their Facebook profile picture? Because that's my favorite, like, character test. I'm like, oh, yep, I know who you are. Yep, know who you are. Like,
yep.
Okay, sorry. I find that so funny, like, in the day of social media, to just be like, oh, I can tell so much from just this.
You're saying so much with so little words.
Yes.
Yes. But this one, I don't think she'd have an account, or if she did, it's like a burner account.
She didn't even need it. People were picking up what she was putting down.
It's true, because she was, like, shifty and rude and fidgety and seemed anxious, and not anxious in, like, a way that's endearing or, like, you want to, like, protect her, like, anxious and, like, she'd snap at you.
Mm.
Their boss actually recalled that Jolene was texting her about Jennifer one day, saying that things seemed off with her. Mm. And that a lot of people kind of said that Jolene was a really good judge of character, and so she had a way to kind of spot the BS.
Mm.
But what Jolene did was call it out.
Okay.
So if she saw BS, she wasn't just going to ignore BS. She, like, called you on your shit.
You didn't stand for it either.
No, she was the blunt friend, and I can appreciate that.
Yeah.
But then they realized that Jennifer Seibert was the woman that they saw from the security footage. The one who had parked Jolene's car in the Home Depot parking lot, who had then walked into the gas station to ask to use a phone to call a ride.
Mm.
So that's weird.
That is pretty weird at 1 a.m. on her birthday.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it? And she was also the last person to see Jolene Cummings alive.
Shifty.
Also, by this time, both Jason Cummings and Jason Gee were ruled out as suspects, leaving them with only one. A bolo, or be on the lookout, was issued for Jennifer's black Kia Soul, and they were very eager to finally get to speak with her.
The hamster mobile?
Yes, it is. All right. I thought the same thing. The car was found in St. Johns County, and it appeared that she had, in fact, been living out of it.
That's crazy. Those are cramped inside.
Jennifer.
Anyway, yes.
I know. They're like little toasters to me.
Yeah.
Jennifer was detained for grand theft auto for the theft of Jolene's vehicle. That is all that they could get her on, but it was enough for now.
Yeah.
What investigators learned about Jennifer Seibert, though, changed the investigation entirely.
Okay.
Because Jennifer's name wasn't really Jennifer.
That tracks.
It was Kimberly Kessler.
Huh?
She was a 50-year-old woman who had gone by at least 17 different aliases.
Whoa, she's 50?
Yes.
Sorry, I don't mean to be ageist. I just was not expecting that. Okay.
Because you probably picture it like 30.
Yeah, I picture, if I'm picturing someone who is, like, new to an area, new to a job, sort of learning, shadowing somebody else in a profession that she's entering, and also has the ability to just, like, straight up quit on spot. I mean, I don't know. That's, anyway. Okay, continue.
Oh, it gets weirder. So she is, yes, indeed, 50 years old. She has had 17, at least 17 different aliases that she's gone by. She is found to have lived in 33 different cities, 14 different states, and never stayed in one place for long enough to plant roots.
Okay.
She was very clearly on the run. Hauntingly, her aliases were not chosen at random or just names that she happened to like. They were chosen from cemeteries and obituaries.
Oh.
She would see a name that she liked and assume the name as if this were her. The name that she was going by, Jennifer Seibert, was from the gravestone of a young girl born in 1974 who died in a car accident in 1987.
Oh my gosh.
Who would have been 13 years old when she died. She saw that name and decided that she now was Jennifer Seibert.
That's awful.
She would claim to investigators that the reason she went by Jennifer and not Kimberly was because she was hiding from that ex-boyfriend, but this was confirmed to be not true. Crazier than that, her ID photos for these various aliases looked like entirely different people, but they were all her.
Oh my gosh.
And if I can find a way to share those on our Instagram page, I will. It is incredibly terrifying just how easily she was able to shapeshift into a different people that, as my hidden talent that is entirely useless to the world, like I can see somebody in a show and be like, you were on that Skittles commercial in 2004. I remember your face. Yeah. Or I remember your voice. Like I clock faces entirely useless. This woman, I could probably see 10 different times and I wouldn't know it.
Right.
And what was crazy about this is that maybe she was a hairdresser this entire time, but she would change her hair, her makeup, her clothing, her style, even her weight, gaining and losing weight as necessary for each identity.
That's wild. And I just looked up some of the identity shifts. That's crazy.
And we're going to talk about just how much she can change her appearance when she decides to, but we're going to get there in a little bit. She told investigators initially that when they ran her fingerprints, it would come back as Kimberly Kessler, and she's been on the run from the FBI for 25 years.
The FBI?
That's what she said.
25 years?
That's what she said.
Oh, is that what she has said? Oh, shit.
Sheriff Bill Leeper, Sergeant Wayne Harrington, and their teams were integral in this investigation, tracking all of this down. And in interviews with her, worked really hard to build a rapport with her. And as you can imagine, this woman is challenging to build rapport with.
Yeah.
What they did have in their favor was that she loved talking about herself when she was actually given the space to do so. And they encouraged this. But they changed their approach and kind of reeled her in, asking about Jolene, about Jolene's car, why she had it, and where Jolene was.
Okay.
Trying to appeal to her to say, listen, there's a mother of three that hasn't come home yet, and I feel like you're the only one that can help us.
Yeah.
Really trying to cater to her sense of self, which seemed to be very strong as she loved to talk about herself, but really like, you are the last
Obi-Wan
piece here. We need your help. We think you know. And she said, no, I can't. And she immediately asked for legal counsel. Like, this was not her first time.
Wow.
Forensic testing at the salon revealed large amounts of blood had been cleaned up.
Oh.
Blood that belonged to Jolene. Luminol lit areas of the salon up like a Christmas tree. Security footage from around the back of the salon showed, I'm just going to call her Kimberly at this point.
Yeah.
So Jennifer is Kimberly. Kimberly is Jennifer. Showed Kimberly wielding heavy trash bags and throwing them in the dumpster out back. And these trash bags look to be quite heavy.
Yeah.
So she really did sort of have to like gain momentum and like swing them to like get them up and over, which I think in a lot of like business trash bags, especially like at a salon, I think there'd be few things that are going to be that heavy.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of hair scraps, but like, even if you're throwing out product bottles, they're empty.
And the security footage just happened to be from the last day that Jolene was seen alive.
Oh, ain't that funny.
It also showed her bringing a blue tote out back and dumping it out in the wood line next to the dumpster.
Oh.
Which was odd. That tote was found and tested positive for blood, and part of Jolene's fingernail was found inside.
Oh.
Those dumpsters, the ones that had now had all of these bags in it that Kimberly had thrown in it, were picked up and emptied on Monday the 14th, the day that Jolene was reported missing.
Wow.
So the day after, you know, the Sunday.
Yeah.
2 days after she was last seen alive. And they were brought to a landfill.
Does that mean this is the one time it's really good news that absolutely nothing breaks down in landfill?
Hold on to that.
Okay.
And I should also add that this landfill was actually located in Georgia, so a different state.
Wow.
And once these dumpsters are unloaded into this landfill, then bulldozers go around and move everything and spread everything out and sort of move it across all of the area and push everything in all different directions. And this is a massive landfill. And again, if I can find photos of this, I will make sure that it is there. In a landfill, everything looks the same. Everything's in bags. Everything is trash. It smells terrible. And at this point, it's the summer in Georgia. It's all been baking in heat.
Yeah.
So they go to this landfill, and now you are looking for a couple of bags that look like all of the other bags in a landfill that is full of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of bags.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of bags.
Sure is.
And even if they knew where the bags had initially been dumped in the landfill, they still got pushed and dragged and moved all over within it.
Oh my gosh.
So they're quite literally searching for a needle in a haystack.
Yeah.
Kimberly was also seen on security footage purchasing some things from a Walmart. Oh. Those items included ammonia, gloves, and an electric carving knife.
Oh, nice. Very good.
And this footage is from a self-checkout scanner. So she purchased all of this. Like, you've got it clear as day because you know the cameras are on it. Loss prevention in a Walmart is so good. Don't steal from Walmart.
Don't steal from Walmart.
Thou shall not steal, don't steal, but also do not steal from a Walmart.
There's also just something so incredibly humbling about the self-checkout cameras anywhere.
Oh, that'll ruin your day.
It'll ruin your week. Look up, you go, oh my God, okay, never mind about the Twix that I picked up. I'm gonna go.
I feel like the people from the restaurant you went to where they roast you get the footage of the last time you were at a Walmart, and they choose what features of yours they're going to exploit.
Yeah.
Because there is something so haunting. I'm like, I didn't realize I was an ill Victorian child. Had no idea.
Have I seen the sun in the last, I don't know, century?
Beat the hell out of me.
Because I'm reflecting all the lights in here back at you.
It is not good.
No.
And this wasn't good for her either, but for very different reasons, because they did see that she made these purchases hours after Jolene was last seen.
Yeah.
They also confirmed with the cadaver that a forensic anthropologist could use the same brand and model of electric carving knife that that Kimberly had bought to dismember a body.
Okay.
So they used a cadaver and they used that same thing and they dismembered a body.
Okay.
And confirmed this is what it is. Imagine you donate your body to science, as many do, and this is the science it was used for. Very fascinating, I guess.
I wouldn't mind it. But, get her ass.
But this did prove that Kimberly could, in fact, use that piece of machinery to dismember a body, that it was possible, and that it could have been done in the salon.
Yeah.
When Kimberly was first brought in, they noticed a cut on her face.
Mm.
She wrote it off as a bicycle accident where, like, she claimed to have crashed into a tree, but this cut did not appear consistent with an injury with a tree, nor did she have any other injuries or marks from, like, bark or anything like that. And what we do think happened is that Jolene fought for her life and scratched her in the process.
Well, good.
Or she could have cut herself with the carving knife.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, it was like a scratch or a cut. This was not a, like, you'd like get several. Yeah, you'd get, like, several, like, scrapes.
Also, does she even have a bike? Bikes are fucking expensive.
You ask good questions.
She probably wouldn't just, like, toss it.
I don't think so. I don't think she was doing any of that. The theory is that Kimberly murdered Jolene in the salon after everyone else had left that day, that she used that electric knife to dismember her body, and that she cleaned the scene pretty well with the cleaning supplies that she purchased at Walmart. She got rid of many belongings at this time, and that she never went back to that job.
Yeah.
Jolene's DNA was found on boots, socks, and scissors that were found in Kimberly's car.
Wow.
That's pretty damning.
That's awful.
The day before Jolene disappeared, she had gotten in an argument with Kimberly. Now, this had just now come out.
I'm sorry, is that a motive?
Apparently, Jolene said something to the effect of, I know you're not who you say you are, and I'm going to find out who you are. which yeah. Kimberly, I believe, heard as a threat.
Yeah, it sounds like she would.
And again, I'm going to keep calling her Kimberly from now on. When they got the forensics of the computer and like her phone and everything, I believe it was her phone searches, but when they got her online searches, they revealed that she had some pretty damning searches as well.
Oh, I bet she did. What's in her Google history?
Which included looking up Florida laws.
Oh.
No body, no crime.
Yeah.
Female serial killers in Florida.
Oh.
She also Googled Jolene Cummings something like 400 times.
That's funny as fuck.
Like repeatedly looking for a news story to pick up the fact that she was missing. And this was before
okay.
she was missing. Like anybody knew that she was right. missing. This was the evening and into the Sunday before any calls had been made. Now, my search history happens to look just like that right about yeah. now. For this research. So I don't want to say that that's automatically evidence of wrongdoing, but considering everything else at hand, I'd say that it's pretty damning. But I will say that I looked up the same exact things that she did so that I could see what she might have seen.
Yeah, and not for nothing. You knew that something had happened to Jolene when you looked up her name 400 times. She shouldn't have at that point, allegedly.
Yep. So, you know, am I on a list too? Perhaps.
Oh, girl, for true crime research, we are on a list.
The list that I am on right now,
uh-huh.
pun intended, because it's a case I'm working on.
Ooh.
But I'm working on a two-parter right now, and you should see the tabs open. My God.
I don't want to, probably.
My husband is like, what are you doing?
And
like,
I was like, am I safe?
I was like, wait for it. I'm like, yeah. Yes, I am statistically the most likely person to kill you, honey.
But I'm not gonna. I love you.
Go to bed. Kimberly's reach had amassed at least 14 states, and investigators made contact with people from her past.
Yes, they did.
Again, she wasn't always going as Kimberly, so having to work through each and every alias that she had and then contact people from this point in her life several years later under the name that they knew her as, under the appearance that they would have recognized her as,
right.
was a lot of work, but they did it.
I love good investigative work.
I love it's great so police satisfying. Work. I love it. You love to see it. And unfortunately, so many people that knew Kimberly from her past had really similar eerie experiences with her. One boyfriend from Butler, Pennsylvania, had his teeth bashed in with a baseball bat. And this was while he was sleeping. And she was punishing him for something. I don't know. A landlord up north said that she was extremely paranoid and that she was delusional. I mean, she had a history of violence and running and evading and poor mental health and really believing some of the stories that she made up. It was, I mean, she was struggling.
Yeah.
No doubt. In September 2018, though, just a couple of months after Jolene disappeared, she was arrested for Jolene's murder.
Wow.
Now, as you know, you avid true crime listeners, I know you, I see you, mm-hmm. I love you. You know how difficult it is to prosecute a murder case when there is no body.
Yeah.
And I am sorry to tell you that Jolene's body was never found.
Ugh.
Which makes what happens in this case rather interesting. And we're going to talk about it. So we're going to kind of fast forward to the court process here. Kimberly's mental health was a hot topic leading up to and throughout her trial.
I'm sure.
She was initially deemed incompetent, mm-hmm. so there were providers that deemed that she was not competent to stand trial. However, she was later reassessed and deemed competent and understood the charges and accusations against her.
Okay.
Her defense attorneys, bless them, because they had an uphill battle from the start. They really tried to lean into incompetency, but prosecutors and investigators just didn't buy it. She was calculated, cold, meticulous. The care in which she took to not get caught was methodical and detailed and not one of a paranoid or delusional woman like they wanted to portray her as.
Well, and what a great way to say, you know, incompetency is not the same as insanity.
Correct.
Like, we're talking about incompetency is like if you're fit to stand trial and understand what's happening right now, not at the time of the crime. And at the time of the crime is insanity. And if you are doing anything to evade getting caught, that you're not going to fit the bill.
Like, you are under, like, you're not. You understand that what you're doing is wrong, and you're understanding that there is a self-preservation instinct for you to not get caught.
Right, and you're trying to hide it.
And you're trying to, yes, like, preserve certain details. Like, that's not insane.
Nope.
It might sound insane. Is not insane.
You might be acting crazy. That doesn't mean you're not present and understanding what's happening.
The care in which she took to not get caught, though, was insane.
Yeah.
Like, she just leaving the car, going to not inside the Home Depot where she parked, but a gas station across the way to try to get a new ride home, to clean up with chemicals, not just wiping up the blood, but really trying to get rid of it, to discard everything in a dumpster to try to make sure that it got taken away. Like, serious, significant efforts were made here.
Right.
Her behavior while she was behind bars awaiting trial was also incredibly inappropriate. And there was also evidence that she researched this too. Like, there's a way that maybe she had access to computers while she was there and, like, wanted to know what the punishment might be for, like, acting out leading up to, or maybe even, like, figuring out which behaviors might get her closer to an incompetency ruling. That's
crazy and so funny.
It is, and, like, it's hard to tell how much of this is, not that how much of it is true, but, like, what it was for and what she was really looking up, because I don't have, like, the Google searches. I know she looked up no body, no crime. I know she looked up Florida laws. Like, I know that piece, but it's sort of hazy on sort of this, like, other stuff that she was looking up here with what she looked up when behind bars. But I mean, like, you have to think, if you're incarcerated, there's not a single thing. You're not going to breathe and they're not going to know about it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, come on.
You are monitored 8 ways to Sunday. Like, it is. It's funny to do on their own system. It is just kind of funny.
I'd just leave her and let her do it.
I mean, same. I'm not going to give her a pro tip, but, like, girl, if you want to give them direct access to your exact stream of thought, by all means.
I think with her, it makes me think of that scene in The Office where Ryan is helping Creed and he's like, I want to blog.
Yes.
And so Ryan just tells Creed, like, oh, this is your blog. And it's like, Creed thoughts / whatever, you know. And Ryan's like, it's a Word document.
He doesn't know the difference.
He doesn't, you know, and he's like, even for the internet, it's a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like they could have just been like, here's your blog, like, write whatever you want. And I guarantee you she'd write something incriminating, like, or like, you can search anything you want. And she'd look up, like, how to get away with Jolene Cummings murder 2018. Like, it, you know, things like that, where it's just like, I feel like if you gave her enough rope, she'd figure it out.
Oh, for sure. That's why I love this stuff, because it's like, please, no. Look it up.
I dare you.
Hit that enter.
Go ahead. No, I want to see it. Go ahead. While she was awaiting trial, while she was incarcerated, it seems that jail staff had just this exceptionally difficult time with her.
Oh.
She would often strip naked. Oh. She smeared feces over the window, blocking the officers from being able to see her. For her safety and theirs, it is vital that officers are able to see what's going on in each and every cell. She was also placed under suicide watch at least once, possibly more. She refused to eat, starving herself, and trigger warning here, she reportedly entered the jail weighing 196 pounds, but her weight was later reported as being 74 pounds.
Holy shit.
And for those of us outside of the U.S., 89 kilos to 33 and a half. So we're talking about significant, drastic, dangerous, rapid weight loss because she decided it. And that's why it almost makes it that much more, I don't mean fascinating, but just like believable that with all of these different aliases that she had and these identities, that she would intentionally gain and lose weight to fit whatever it was that this identity, like, required of her.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that she was, like, suffering from dissociative identity disorder. I just think, like, she was on the run and taking on different aliases and had decided what each one was going to look like. But to enter somewhere at 196 pounds in a matter of months, be down to 74 pounds, like, that is
over half of your weight.
So unhealthy. Like, for a grown woman to weigh that, like, that is not healthy. You are depriving your body of nutrients. Like, this was pretty significant. And also,
her poor metabolism is going to be fucked forever and not for nothing. It is making the lack of forethought on anything make sense. Your brain needs calories to run, babe.
So she's also not just like smearing, which is not a word I love, schmear, but she did schmear feces on that like observation window, but she also flung her feces at officers like a monkey. You ever see that video? You know what it is. And she, because you know exactly what I'm talking about. Kind of breaks my heart, poor lady, but
just the way you said, yeah, okay, I know what you're talking about.
And okay. After she would throw the feces,
uh-huh,
as she enjoyed, she'd also scream a lot. Like, she would yell profanities.
She was just... Why does this feel like some sort of performative art Yoko Ono would have done?
Yes. And yeah, she'd be like, put that on the record. Like, come on, John. You know. Yeah. She was just something else. That's a tale for a different time. But ultimately, when it came to Kimberly, she was like, for lack of a better term, disgusting in what she was doing and the way that they had to handle her, because her safety and her well-being is very important.
Yeah.
And it should be. And I know that not all institutions are created equally. And again, a totally different conversation for a different day. But in this case, like, they were working really hard to meet her needs and take care of her.
Right.
And she was purposefully, I think, really trying to lean into what she thought she needed to do for her defense, which was to
fling fecal matter at police officers. What a time to be alive.
Like, to appear what she thought was crazy. Because when she's in an interrogation room, when she's talking with the police, when she's first interviewed, none of this comes up.
No.
There is none of this. She is talkative. She's social. She's likable. I mean, she's full of shit and loves herself. But, like, she is not stripping or flinging anything. There's no screaming. There's no anything. And she lawyers up immediately at that time. So she was very calculated and meticulous in that moment. And then when she is incarcerated awaiting trial, I think she's leaning in with like the heaviest pour she can to try to sway kind of like her competency, especially when she was ultimately deemed competent. I think she's really trying to undo that. And that's just tough because there's a lot. So she would fling her feces at officers and she would scream. And then she'd also, I believe, like we said, search the penalties of what doing that would be. So, like,
yeah.
Does that sound like someone who's unable to control or understand their own actions?
They can certainly understand long enough to Google it later.
Or does it sound like someone who wants to be perceived as quote unquote crazy for a lesser sentence and believes she knows best on how to get there? I'm leaning with the latter, but that's just me. During her trial, Kimberly refused to participate, as is her right, but she was so inappropriate during her very brief appearances before the judge that she was often held in a room outside of the courtroom where she was given a computer where she could access and watch the whole trial, but this mitigated her outbursts and disruptions in the courtroom.
Okay.
At one point, it said that she screamed obscenities at the judge, and she did also yell that her attorney was Jolene Cummings' cousin over and over and over again. And there is footage of this, and I watched it. So her attorney is like defending her for all it's worth, trying to like get her, you know, trying to do a good job. And
her case is the boulder, and he's pushing it up that fucking hill.
He is trying, and she comes in and she's like trying to stomp on the boulder to go back down the hill, accusing him, her attorney, of being Jolene's, the victim's cousin.
Is that true?
No. There was absolutely no evidence of this. Of course not.
Sorry,
no.
Oh my God.
Okay. So she gets wheeled in and she's like yelling all this stuff. That's Jolene Cummings' cousin. That's Jolene Cummings' cousin. And then they wheel her right back out and he's just like, Your Honor, my client is.
But Your Honor, come on. Man.
Your Honor, she's a Gemini. What can I say? You know, but it's just
Gemini
like.
Gemini slander.
But I imagine that is a very tough job. And I think a lot of times in true crime podcasts, there's a lot of shit on defense attorneys. And a lot of times I'm like, I could not do your job. I couldn't sleep at night. I don't know how you do that because I don't have a damn good thing to say about some of the things. And I have to give credit where it's due that you need defense attorneys as much as you need prosecutors.
Oh, and yes, we need both.
And in this case, you know, others might say throw her, you know, lock her up and throw away the key. That's not our system. It shouldn't be. That's not due process. That's not what we're doing. And in this case, her attorney still tried to give her the very best defense that he possibly could, even though she was essentially trying to, like, get him fired.
Yeah.
And instigate and accuse him of, like, working against her.
Yeah.
All for the sake of, you know, trying to prove insanity. I don't think it was something they discussed beforehand. I don't think this was, like, he was in on it, but I think he was still trying to do his damn job. And she just made it incredibly difficult.
You know, like, hats off to him. It also reminds me of the Jodi Arias case where, like, sometimes work is work. You get stuck doing the shit end of the job and you just have to keep doing it. So, like,
when he wanted to quit and it's like, no, you're defending Jodi Arias.
No, sir. Sit your ass back down. Like, I can appreciate that even when this is your client, this is the person you're supposed to have meetings with, trying to create any sort of logical defense or just any case to get her anything better than what she would if she just went in there and said, hey, I'm here, I did it. Like, that's who you're supposed to be working with. And she's flinging feces at people and screaming at you, accusing you of essentially being an unethical practicing attorney.
Yeah. Not great.
No.
Now, luckily, the jury was spared from her outburst. So, I mean, I don't know if you've been in court before, but in trials like these, the jury are brought in and out usually pretty frequently.
Yeah.
There are conversations that happen when attorneys approach the bench that are not privileged for the jury to hear. So they're spared this because that could be, that could sway their opinion. Yeah. They're not to acknowledge that if she can't be appropriate, then they remove her. So the jury was actually not even given a reason as to why she wasn't present in the courtroom. They just carried on as if this were typical, and it's not, because normally they're present.
Right.
But she has the option to not be if she doesn't want to be. So maybe they thought she just chose not to be, but they didn't hear her or see this as to not sway their opinion.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it's how that should be. As much as you'd, like, on the back end of this, be like, I wish they saw that. You know, that's just not how it works. So their view was not tainted or impacted by her behavior.
Yeah. All they got was the evidence, which is what they should get.
Prosecutors had lots of circumstantial and physical evidence on their side. Again, the security footage of her purchase at Walmart, which included ammonia gloves and the electric carving knife, the footage of her dumping the bags in the dumpster, the footage of her leaving the car in Home Depot and going to the gas station, the evidence of blood in the salon, the searches online for no body, no crime, her lies to the investigators, her research of, like, essentially how to act crazy shows that she wasn't. I mean, like, there is so much.
Yeah.
But they don't have a body.
Yeah.
They have, like, Jolene's fingernail. Like, that is, like, one of the things that has been left behind. And that is essentially it.
Right.
And, I mean, who hasn't broken a nail? I don't know how much of the nail it was, if it was, like, from the nail bed. But, I mean, like, that's a bad day. I hate doing that. But, like, that, you could find that. And that, I feel like defense would have something to work with.
Yeah, and plausible deniability is there. You're working with scissors all day long. Who's to say you didn't chip some of it off? Or,
right,
you know, literally anything. You're working with chemicals, bleaching hair. Shit happens.
Right, versus, like, when I remember covering the wood chipper murder, the Hella Crafts case. Her, like, all of her remains were never found, but they did find, like, a piece of her skull, which,
right,
like, this was a very tiny piece of her remains, but this happens to be a piece of remains that she would not have survived losing.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Versus, like, a fingernail.
It unfortunately grows out. You cut it off yourself.
Unfortunately happens. You're working with your hands all day. Shit can happen.
Yeah, you so, get fingernail cutters.
Like that, I can see that. Ultimately, Kimberly Kessler was thankfully convicted of first degree murder of Jolene Cummings.
Bless up. That's fascinating.
She was also convicted of the auto theft and battery against an officer while she was incarcerated because she was not very nice.
Well, yeah.
She was sentenced to serving life without parole. In a statement outside the courthouse, Jolene's mother, Anne, said, quote, "I do have a message from one mother to another mother. I know that you feel the pain of not being able to see your son, but if you could find it within your heart to tell us where the remains of my daughter are, where are the remains of my daughter? Give us some closure. I'm asking you from one mother to another. That's all I have to say, and that's all I pray for.
Wow.
And while I empathize with her mother and want to give her the biggest hug, and I cannot imagine what it was that she was feeling, I don't think any amount of pleading to Kimberly was going to result in the response that she wanted. I think that Kimberly never admitted that she dumped her body in the garbage, but the dumpster was brought to the landfill and the landfill was then spread out. I mean, I think that it's pretty obvious that her body, her remains, or what was left of them after that time, were brought there, and then that's where they are.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's anything that Kimberly would have told her that would get her any closer to it.
Yeah.
But I think she just wants her to say, tell me where you put her.
Yeah, tell me what you did. Say it.
When they did actually do searches of the landfill, and they did lots, several, like weeks and weeks, and like so many people working through this, looking, and they'd find bones and they'd bag them and they'd test them, and it would turn out to be animal bones, which, odd. I'm hoping that it was like after a meal or something.
Sure.
And not like anything more sinister than that, but like the heat of Georgia in like July when they're looking through this, and rotting food and others, like just the smell, the visual, the monotonous mound of everything, and just, and you're looking for a person, you're looking for someone.
Yep.
Like, that is her final resting place. That is absolutely disgusting. Yeah. That is no person, no human is deserving of that inhumanity, and especially not this one.
No.
A mother of three, a hard worker, a kind woman, someone who loved her family, who loved the people around her, who was loved by the people around her, who called someone out on their bullshit when she was right that there was bullshit to call.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and then her mother, Anne, also made another statement saying, today we praise God. Praise God that we got the verdict and that it gives us some type of closure. While my daughter Jolene has not been found, we have at least the verdict of the indictment of first-degree premeditated murder. We miss Jolene every second of the day. My family, our families, the Cummings families, the children. Not a day goes by, but I feel like Jolene is with us today. I feel like she's actually been in the courtroom with us.
Wow.
As I said, Jolene's body has never been found. The day Kimberly was sent to prison, the jail staff who had worked with her literally held a party. I shit you not.
That they checks.
Had cake and ice cream on the day that she was brought from the jail to the prison.
Yeah.
And they all celebrated. Yep. Like, and I think their cake was like, congrats on your new home, or like, she's homebound, or like something like that. And obviously she didn't get a damn piece of it. And she shouldn't have. But like, I think the staff were like tormented by her. It was like, nobody wanted to go near. Like, she was.
Well, yeah. If you're going to walk in, get shit flung at you, and then she's going to probably, I don't know, fucking try to bite you or something.
And your responsibility is her safety, and she is purposefully, like, blocking your view from being able to tell that. Yeah. Like, you are responsible for what happens to her in that cell, what she does to herself, what she does to others.
Again, as they should be, but truly a menace to have in your care.
Yeah, I mean, I would not want to trade places with them, and I hope that they had, like, more than one ice cream party for that.
I hope they had ice cream cake. Like, that... I think that was warrants an ice cream cake.
Cake and ice cream. I don't know that it
okay,
was.
Okay, but you know an ice cream cake is better.
I completely agree with you. And Carvel, if you would sponsor me, I would shout you out. But
keep you in business.
But I do think that, like, the relief of, like, she has gone out of here and she'll never. Not only is she gone out of here, but she is never going to be free.
Yeah.
Like, a woman who caused so much destruction, who not only to Jolene and her family, but to so many others. And right. I purposefully did not dig into Kimberly's background, because I think the people that unfortunately had to be around her are deserving of some space. I'm sure that her son has to deal with a lot related to this. But just the fact that so many people were just thrilled that she was rid of is telling.
Yeah.
A friend of Jolene's mother began a GoFundMe for the family to raise money to purchase a headstone.
Oh.
On their page, they explained that the family had to endure 4 years of pain before a resolution was reached, where Kimberly Kessler was convicted of the murder, but still, there was no body. And they wanted to memorialize Jolene and still have a headstone regardless.
Yeah.
And if her body were to be found, that she'd receive the Christian burial that she would have wanted. But until then, they wanted a place to visit with. This headstone could be a place where the children could go to feel near to their mother, where family and friends could pay their respects.
Yeah.
This GoFundMe was created in 2022 and raised nearly $2,700. It has since been closed. I did look it up.
Holy cow.
They purchased a beautiful headstone that has an angel on it. And in the center, there's a photo of Jolene. It says, "In our hearts forever." And at the bottom, it reads, "Beloved mother of Kylie, Jackson, and Brayden."
Oh.
Jolene's loved ones are, of course, devastated by her loss. Her children will forever ache for their mom. She was taken from them seemingly for no reason. At most, due to an argument with a woman who may or may not have had experience killing and discarding others before. But Jolene's life was needlessly taken, and her memory lives through the friends and family who loved her. And that is what I have for you on the murder of Jolene Cummings. And I think that there is a lot to unpack here.
Holy poop.
When we talk about things that we can learn, because this really made me think of your case that you just covered. And of course, Abby and I do not talk about cases that we're covering ahead of time. Like, I don't know what she's doing. She doesn't know what I'm doing. And when we were covering the coin shop killer, when you mentioned this part about the Texas owner who noticed that, or Utah owner, and I think he had said he was from Texas and he was a farmer. Charles did.
Yes.
And the guy in Utah was like, he doesn't have farmer's hands. Like, he clocked it as something was off. And he kind of like noted that in his mind. And I don't think that he should have or shouldn't have done anything. I don't think, you know, that's something I don't know about. But if he did, then I wonder what would have happened if he called him out on that. And then in this case, this is a similar situation where you're picking up on vibes that someone is being dishonest and shifty and not truthful. And on the flip of that, you know, she was called out.
Right.
And so it was like, regardless, called out or not called out, depending on the person, depending on the circumstances, that rage or that violence can still come out.
Well, and I think that is truly, like, that is one of my biggest fears. I think we talk about true crime and this notion of sort of being fascinated by things that are real threats to you, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we've talked before, like, true crime has a massive female following, probably because we are statistically the most likely to be victims of it.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, there is this genuine, like, deep fear of this snapped moment of, like, this, nope, I am still doing this. Like, it does not matter where we are, who you are, what's happening, like, that's done. And it is that, I think, driving factor that, like, I don't do road rage. I don't know who's in that car. I don't know what they have in that car. I'm not doing it. I'm not taking that chance. And so I appreciate so much a woman who can see bullshit and call bullshit out. And this also is so validating as to why we need systems on how to do that that are somewhat protective. Like, you will always catch me. Oh, you will always catch me putting in an anonymous tip. If I'm saying anything to anyone, if anybody's name is in my damn mouth, you will not know it was my mouth it was in. And that is not, again, we never victim blame. We are not here to say that anybody should or shouldn't do anything, but just the consequences of some of this stuff is so dire. Like, what a wonderful woman who we've been deprived of for nothing but saying the truth.
Yeah, I mean, her family, her everything, like, she was a mom of three, a rock star, loved by so many, and because she called bullshit as she saw it,
mm-hmm.
that inspired this woman who just happened to have time one-on-one with her, was like, who killed her in their workplace.
Yep.
And then dismembered her body, and it was never found. Like, that all happened in a matter of hours.
Yep.
is just absolute madness. And so I think we learn a lot from this. And I think these lessons can also be opposite, where it's like, say something and also don't, and also be careful, and also tell somebody else. And, yeah. You know, there's so many different ways to look at this. And it was so needless. And of course, the person at fault here is Kimberly.
Yes. 100%.
But when we try to analyze what we could or couldn't do, it's just like, half the time I want to say you should absolutely call it out. And then there's another half that's like, well, you don't really know who you're calling out.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing. I think both of those are true. And we just have to find the gray area and like the way forward in understanding the consequences of both of these. If you don't call it out, some shit's happening. She was wanted by the FBI.
She says, I believe so.
Also, like, yeah. So allegedly she's wanted by the FBI. She clearly has something in her past that is an issue for her, whether that is personal or external, like an internal struggle or an external, who knows? I venture to say external because she seems to have a lot of control of herself.
I think she did this before.
I would venture to say so if she's Googling female serial killers in Florida.
I'm just wondering how many people she had killed before. I do feel like there's more than one, just with how, mm-hmm. I mean,
methodical,
with ease she quick. Did this. And in a way, like Jolene calling her out is what put a stop to it.
Yes. But also,
but Jolene at what cost?
Calling her out and her being that upset to me says there's something to be found out.
Like if Jolene is saying you're hiding something and I'll find out what it is, even though Jolene likely did not have the means to do right. So the fact that, what was she so afraid of somebody figuring out, yeah. To me tells me that there's so much more. But at the same time, like, while I can appreciate that in a way Jolene did ensure, mm-hmm. that it was found out, she paid with her life, and that is just too great a price to pay.
It's never worth that. And that's the hard part, is figuring out, like, how do we, as humans, do our due diligence to protect other humans while keeping ourselves safe? And, I mean, truly, like, if you want to get down to the root of it, it's a philosophy question. You know, what does the greatest amount of good with the least amount of harm with what we have at hand? And that's really hard. That's a question that only you can answer for yourself. And that's part of why we always talk about this stuff. But I have a really hard time with this, because clearly she's struggling with something. Kimberly is not a well person. Mm-mm. That doesn't make her a good person, and it certainly does not negate the bad things she did. There's nothing she did that's okay.
No, I mean, and she was competent. She wasn't deemed insane, and there's some weight in that to me, especially because initially she was, and it was overturned.
Yep.
And I think that, like, there's so much available about this case. Florida, we always joke about Florida Man and all the crazy, mm-hmm. shit that happens in Florida. And while I will say Florida can be fucking wild, Florida does also have different reporting laws than a lot of other states, where actually so much is available and able to be reported on and released to the public that most other states do not report. Right. So it almost seems like there is, like, an overabundance of shit that happens there, when in reality, it's probably about the same as neighboring states and around that area, but they are allowed to and encouraged to report so much more on those things. Oh, yeah. That I think so much of this case was sort of available, which was great. I felt like I got a lot of good information on this case, but I also think it's like, all right, well, of course it's Florida. Yeah. But yeah. At the same time, I'm also kind of appreciative that this information's available and that you can learn something from it, because this woman bebopped all around the country. Like, she was in Pennsylvania and I think like Idaho and like, yeah. Like she went everywhere. Okay, this woman lived in like 14 different states.
Yeah.
That's a lot of states.
It's a lot of states. And
I don't know that I've been to 14 states.
I like to point out heat aggression as always a rationale for the Florida Man. But if you're up in fucking Idaho and Pennsylvania, it doesn't fucking matter.
No.
It does not matter.
Because it's not that. Because it's so many. Because
it's a Kimberly problem. It's not a Florida problem in this case.
The fact that she could see this young girl's gravestone, Jennifer Seibert, who died at 13 years old in a car accident, and say that that's it, I'm taking on this persona now, like her name, yeah. her identity, like this is my name now, and was able to like file paperwork and make that work. Like, first of all, how the fuck was she doing all that? Getting like IDs, like she's getting arrested. Like, there are booking photos of her.
Yep.
Under these other names. How?
Well, I think it's the same thing that we talked about with Charles. You get a fake ID maker, you learn how to work it, and you do a good job, I guess.
And I don't think Charles was insane. No. And I don't think that she's insane. I think that she is doing some crazy shit.
Oh, for sure.
But that's different.
Well, and that's quite literal, too. But I also think that it is the same kind of notion of, like, Charles did a very similar thing. Not quite as ruthless, I guess, with the name grab. But, like, that was someone from his high school. He was like, yep, that name is mine now. And, like, the way she is just cherry picking what she wants. And if you look up, seriously, look up the photos of her different aliases. We will try to have them on our Instagram. But you just Google it. You'll see a shitload. She is different people.
Different people.
And the way you can tell who she is, how she is from her smile. Like, there's like one little crooked part of her bottom lip that I'm like, okay, I can consistently identify that.
But other than that, she is like a shapeshifter.
Mm-hmm. And this notion of being so in control of your identity, knowing that you need to change your identity, knowing the need for self-preservation, the consistent moving, not even having an address, not trusting a business enough to give a P.O. box even that mm-hmm. could be connected to you.
Yep.
Keeping all of this going on. And, you know, I am always here to, like, Allie and I, we don't know what the other one's doing. I'm sure you guys have figured out by now. I kind of like to poke a little. I like to try to find other theories or ideas than what's being presented, because I'm like, if I was an investigator and all I'm getting presented with is this information, you know, is this woman evading the police because she's terrified and afraid of authority or power and control, or, you know, maybe has some sort of personal issue that she doesn't want them getting into for non-sinister reasons? Mm-hmm. Or is she avoiding the police because she fucking killed someone? Like, there are two very different ways to go down. And I like to point that out because I think sometimes in cases that are not this one, in cases that don't have people that are batshit crazy, that kind of do things that sounded like her at the beginning, mm-hmm. not later on, but at the beginning, people end up assuming the worst when it's just someone who's like, I just don't want my shit out there. Like, mm-hmm. I'm just trying to be me. I'm trying to do my thing. I'm doing the right thing. I'm going home. I'm not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is worth respecting. And at the same time, knowing when that sort of alarm flag becomes a red flag.
Mm-hmm.
And what a fucking case, dude.
Well, you know, a lot of you have liked to utilize the Spotify sort of like leave a message.
Yes, we love
and
it.
And we read all of them. So please keep doing that. It makes our hearts very happy. And you know, we try to ask you guys. We don't claim to be the all knowing or the moral compass here by any means. This is just sort of like our initial thoughts and opinions, and they grow and change. But we like to hear what you guys have to say about the cases that we cover and different perspectives. That we learn a lot from you guys, and we appreciate it. So take a look at that. I know most of you listen on Spotify. That's why I mentioned it. But, you know, even if you listen on Spotify, maybe you have an iPhone. Maybe you feel so inclined to leave us a 5-star review anywhere you could listen, like on Apple Podcasts, and leave like a cute little note, because, you know, we like reading those too. And
you could also, if you were so inclined, leave, again, please, a message, a comment, anything below, or you could hop on our link tree that is in the description, and on that you would find not only our Instagram, where you could send us a DM, you could also see the people, the places, the things that we talk about, pod pets, funny memes, resources. You can kill a day on there, and that's all thanks to Allie, but you can find that down below, where you would please, please, please send us a case recommendation, your thoughts, again, your pod pets, we need them. But you could also find our email if you wanted to send something a little bit longer, or even our Venmo, our PayPal, if you wanted to donate to the pod, maybe send us a cup of coffee or pay for the audition subscription once a month that we use to edit this thing. If you wanted to do any of that, again, that is in our link tree below. And in the meantime, hop on our Instagram. Dude, it's fun. It's cute. I like it there. I do almost nothing there and I love it there. So you should hop over there. I'll be there with you. But until we see you next time, if I do check my watch, that was
About Time for True Crime.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh my God.
I know.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, jeez, Anne.